Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Thanks for staying up late with us, and hey, it was for good reason. The Red Sox are undefeated in the post-Rafael Devers era. They beat the Seattle Mariners tonight 2-0. Lucas Giolito dominates. Aroldis Chapman closes it out. Roman Anthony gets his first major league career home run. So, good stuff all around, and Red Sox continue their winning ways. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman. And Terry, after the whirlwind of the last 24 hours, feels like this was a much needed win tonight.
It was. You know, it's been a very emotional day or an emotional 24 hours. But yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like Lucas Giolito basically won this game all by himself. You know, you had Roman Anthony getting his first home run, like you said, but a really boring game. And if you're trying to appeal to Red Sox fans to stay up late, this isn't the game you want. Like, we're content creators and, you know, we try to do a show every day except Saturday nights. So there's no Sunday morning drop, in other words. But here we are. We're committed to it. And it was cool to see Lucas Giolito punch out 10. And then in the third inning, I think it was, loaded the bases, no outs. And that was the 7, 8, and 9 hitters that got on base that all singled. And then he punched out the next three. It was Crawford, Rodriguez, and someone else. And So that was kind of fun to watch. But other than that, kind of a snooze fest. I think the Red Sox were fortunate that we're kind of catching the Mariners on a downward trend here. They're not winning a ton of games. So, you know, usually you only put up two. You're taking the L.
Yeah, the Mariners have been kind of going through a roller coaster of their own because they just got Logan Gilbert back tonight. That was his first start back from the IL. They had a bunch of guys go down with injuries, and really, their offense is just Cal Raleigh at this point. I mean, Julio Rodriguez is doing okay, but the rest of that lineup just does not hit. I mean, once again, the Mariners are going to be fishing for bats at the deadline because this is just who they are every year. They've got a stacked rotation, but they can't score. And, you know, the middle of that lineup, as you said, you know, the bottom of the lineup gets on, they load the bases, and Giolito is able to get through it because that top end of the lineup, just they strike out a ton and they don't manufacture a ton of offense. So, yeah, the Red Sox were a little bit lucky. They are definitely catching the Mariners at a good time when they're going through their own struggles. But Really, it's the pitching that is kind of opening my eyes a little bit. And I wonder if Andrew Bailey had like a revelation a week or two ago where suddenly he realized, you know, pitching backwards in terms of starting out with the breaking ball and not getting ahead in the count wasn't actually a good philosophy. And now he's saying, yeah, actually, you know what? Establish with your fastball a little bit. Let's get some first pitch strikes and then, you know, go to your changeup for, you know, in Giolito's case or your sweeper in Buehler's case and punch him out that way. I just feel like the pitching philosophy the last week or week and a half has changed. I mean, Brian Bello looked like a completely different pitcher because they were letting him throw his fastball more. Same with Walker Buehler, his last start. He was establishing with the fastball. Giolito this time around. So, you know, you look at the numbers, like Giolito faced 21 batters tonight. 11 of them he had a first pitch strike on. So that's something the Red Sox pitchers have not been doing. I feel like first half of the season, they were falling behind in counts, walking too many guys, and then, you know, it just kind of spiraled from there. So I think, like you mentioned, it's a tough game to stay up late for because, you know, it is just a pitching duel with really just two exciting offensive plays. But I think it's good to see that Lucas Giolito and some of the other guys in this rotation are finally, you know, pitching differently and pitching more aggressively, getting ahead in counts, striking more guys out. And if that can be the case, if you can get Giolito, Buehler, and Bayo rolling behind Crochet, it changes the outlook of this team entirely.
It does feel like there's been a shift in philosophy. And, you know, I criticized Andrew Bailey going back to last season. It just seemed like he came in with a one-size-fits-all approach. And it just didn't work. I mean, Nick Pivetta went from throwing like 50 to 60% fastballs down to like 33% four-seam fastballs. And then he kind of got hurt for a little while. You know, he went on the injured list. I don't think he missed a ton of time, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. But, and then everyone in the first couple of months seemed to regress this year. I mean, Hauk is injured, actually, ironically, and you know, Bayo didn't have a good start, Giolito didn't have a good start, and they've kind of turned a corner here, and it's nice to see. And we'll get more into the Devers trade here in a minute, but you know, you get two pitchers and we don't know what their roles are going to be, and Harrison was optioned down to the minors, so I guess that's not really a factor for now. But I'm looking at this rotation through the Yankees series, and who do you want to take out of it right now? I don't want to take anybody out. What we're seeing from Lucas Giolito, what's his ERA at? Let's see. I got it right here. He is down to 4.73. So, you know, it's coming back down to, you know, a palatable number after being, I think, north of 6 for a little while. Brian Bayo, a 3.55 ERA. Like, everything's trending in the right direction. And Hunter Dobbins, maybe Giolito's starting to make a case now, and maybe Bayo will make a continued case. But Dobbins is your second best guy, and he doesn't rattle. Like, he can handle the moment. And, you know, beat the Yankees twice, just completely owned Aaron Judge over the weekend, which basically everyone did anyway. But this rotation is kind of saving us. I mean, we've had a couple of games where it only took two runs to win, one tonight, one in the Yankees series. I think there was another game within the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 days, you put up three runs. That was good enough to win. So it's good to see.
Yeah, and obviously health is going to play a big factor in that, right? So the pitching philosophy, if it has changed, it looks like it's changed for the better. The next part will be health, right? Because, I mean, you got a couple of arms in that bullpen, Bernardino, Weissert, that feels like their arms are hanging on by a thread right now. So health is going to be paramount, and I'm very curious to see. I think Tanner Houck's supposed to start on Wednesday, a rehab start. So I'm curious, like, what does he look like? Is he throwing his two-seam fastball more, or is he going back to throwing the sweeper and, you know, doing a, you know, being heavy on the breaking ball like he was before? Because I think the previous Andrew Bailey pitching philosophy really hurt Tanner Houck. Like, I don't think that he was built for that. I think Houck would prefer to establish with his fastball and kind of go from there. So I'm curious to see how he looks on Wednesday and if he can, you know, kind of work his way back. And then what's his role? Because like you said, I don't want to take anyone out of this rotation right now, the way those guys are throwing. So maybe Houck comes back as more of a swingman, more of a piggyback guy for Dobbins. If Dobbins, you know, you don't want to extend his pitch count too much. So they might have some options here. And yeah, if the pitching can keep this up, then, you know, they can go a lot further than we thought initially this season.
Yeah, I think it would be insanely stupid to put Tanner Houck in the rotation. And his fastball has really been what the problem was leading up to the injury. There was just no movement on it, and he was getting crushed. So they need to figure out the movement aspect. You just mentioned Greg Weissert and Brendan Bernardino. Their arms are falling off. This bullpen needs arms. So just stick them in the bullpen and do what you did with Nick Pivetta. Every time Pivetta got sent to the bullpen, I was thinking, good, leave him there for the rest of the season. Just leave him there. And then he would figure it out, and he'd come out for two innings, three innings here and there, and then he would just be utterly dominant, and then there would be a need for him to go back into the rotation, and then he would dominate. So I think that's a good kind of model for how to manage Tanner Houck right now, and we'll see. I was surprised to see, and I only saw this the other day, I forget who's appeared in the most games as a reliever, but whoever it was had 36 appearances out of the bullpen. And I was expecting to see Bernardino towards the top, but Weissert, believe it or not, as of yesterday, and I guess today would be even more ahead of Bernardino, but yesterday Weissert had 33 appearances. So add another one onto that today. Bernardino had 32. So these guys are taxed. And I think Slayton's going to be back more sooner than later. So, yep. You know, that'll be a welcome addition. Whitlock has been pitching really well, even in the two inning role, which I've hated, but at least it's finally starting to work. And so, you know, if we can just get them reinforcements fairly quickly. So how do we feel about the lineup right now? I mean, you had Abraham Toro hitting second tonight. Somebody had to hit second, but I didn't expect it would be Abraham Toro.
No, but I guess when you look at the way the rest of the lineup shakes out, I mean, who else are you going to put in that number two spot? I don't think you can put Narvaez there, because then you got Toro hitting cleanup, and that means Roman Anthony's not going to see anything to hit. And you can't put Trevor Story there because he strikes out too much. So I think for now, Toro is hot enough where it kind of works, or you can make it work, especially with the pieces around him. But Toro is eventually going to hit a slump here. Like, he is naturally a streaky hitter throughout his whole career. So it's a little bit of a wonky lineup, but I think for now it's just kind of, it's what you have to do. You took a major piece out of the middle of it, so it's not really going to make a lot of sense right now. And if Trevor Story can get back to waking up a little bit, then maybe you can shuffle some things around. If Carlos Narvaez gets really hot, then maybe you move him to the two spot. I think against lefties, you will see more of what Cora did against the Yankees, where he's going to move Duran out of that leadoff spot, because Duran's been putrid against left-handers this year. And it's kind of one of those things that nobody really wants to talk about, because the idea of moving Duran out of that leadoff spot is like taboo to a lot of people. But I think against lefties, you'll see more of what Cora did, where leadoff with Ref Snyder, put Duran like fifth or sixth and kind of manufacture it that way. But I think for now against righties, this is kind of what you're left with. And we'll see, because that DH spot is now wide open. So it was Campbell tonight, might be Anthony another day, might be Meyer another day. There's also a left-handed hitting DH that, you know, hasn't emerged yet, because he can't throw the baseball, but he can hit. So I think it was Lou Maloney who said it the other night. He's like, why not, you know, have Yoshida DH for a game or two, make sure he can still swing the bat. And if he can, then call him up. I mean, what are you waiting for? You know, I'd rather they call up Yoshida and actually use him than call up Nate Eaton. That doesn't do anything for you. So if you're going to call up an extra outfielder anyway, so I think it's just a matter of, can he actually throw? And like, you know, but if he's DHing, it shouldn't matter. So I think you will see something like that pretty soon.
Yeah, you'll see him magically hitting, and probably I still would rather see Yoshida go through a full rehab thing. I think you get 10 games in the minors, and I would just try to ramp that up. But Devers was blocking him, and so here's his pathway back if you really want him. Another lefty hitter. I was just looking through the lineup. So the crazy thing about tonight, I mean, if you want to talk about how much of a snooze fest it is, both teams only had 4 hits. That's just crazy. And the 3 that mattered most for the Red Sox was obviously the solo home run right away from Anthony. Third inning, Duran hits a triple right down the right field line, just, you know, turned on the burners and got into third. And then Toro hit one just kind of out of range for the second baseman. He did get his glove on it and kept it in the infield, but kind of mishandled the ball. I think Toro would have been safe anyway, but Duran came home on that, and that's how you get your 2 runs. And 3 of the Mariners' hits were the 3 singles I talked about earlier in the third inning. So just an absolute snooze fest. I think tomorrow night with Bueller, I don't know who we'll get to the matchup, but I don't think Bueller will get through it quite as cleanly. I think there's a good chance he can give you an extremely solid start. He's had 2 pretty good ones in a row. But let's go ahead and get into the Devers thing. You weren't on the show last night, and for the 4 of us that went on, I mean, things were still pretty raw. Details were trickling out, and it takes a long time to process a trade like that. And I had Chris Felico and Nick the Voice in the room with me. We hadn't gone live yet. We were waiting for Jeremy to come in. And I told these guys, I said, this is the one show you're going to remember forever. For as long as you're content creating, you're going to remember this show. You're going to remember where you were. You're going to remember how you felt about it. There will never be a trade of this magnitude, positive or negative. And one of them, I want to say it was Nick the Voice, pointed out, like, you know, maybe the only trade bigger might have been the Babe Ruth trade, as insane as that sounds. I mean, maybe some historian can tell me something that happened in the 1960s, but I don't remember another trade of this magnitude. You go back in recent years, Kevin Youkilis, I mean, the dude was washed by then. He was at the very end of his career. Manny, you know, I mean, that had kind of run its course. I think everybody was sick of him at that point. And you got Jason Bay back, who was an immediate, you know, impact. So you got over it pretty quickly. But I told them, you'll probably never cover a show with a trade of this magnitude. And so what were your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think that's true, because especially for an in-season trade, because, you know, everyone compares it to Mookie Betts. Well, Mookie Betts was an off-season trade, and the writing was on the wall with that one, because, you know, they couldn't come to an agreement. They kept putting him through arbitration. We already knew, just based on the reports, that he was probably going to be traded. I've seen people compare it to the Nomar trade. Nomar was starting to break down at that point. And I think he was in the last year of his deal too. So that was another one of those where the writing was on the wall. Like, yeah, it was a shocker just because Nomar meant so much to the city because of, you know, how he was drafted and developed and, you know, really looked like he was going to be the greatest shortstop of all time. But then the injuries started happening and his attitude got worse. And so that one you really kind of understood too. This one just came out of nowhere. I mean, I was, you know, with my in-laws, and just like when I looked at my phone and saw everyone freaking out. I'm like, no, that's got to be fake. That's not a real tweet. He's not actually getting traded. And then sure enough, it was real. You saw the return. And I think now processing it and kind of reading up on, and we'll get into, you know, some of the quotes that have come out about, you know, really just how messy things were behind the scenes between Devers, Cora, Breslow, John Henry. I think you look at it and you go, I think the Red Sox knew they had to move on. And I think the Giants were the perfect partner because the Giants said, we'll take the entire contract. Because I think if they hadn't, Devers would still be here. It sounds like they were, you know, talking with Buster Posey over there for a couple of weeks. I'm sure that they were talking with other teams as well. I mean, at the end of the day, when you struggle the way the Red Sox have to start the year, and, you know, there's rumors of Devers being unhappy, then teams are going to call and going to say, look, you know, you guys want to shake things up? You know, are you willing to trade Raffy Devers? And I think the Red Sox just kept saying, you've got to eat the contract. We're not eating money on this one. And so probably a lot of teams shied away. And then, you know, I think really the Giants lost 2 out of 3 of the Dodgers this past weekend. And I think somebody over there said, you know what? Tell them we'll eat the contract. We need the bat because San Francisco for years has been desperate to get back into the race. They tried to sign Aaron Judge. He didn't want to go there. They tried to sign Otani. He didn't want to go there. They tried for Bryce Harper years ago. They couldn't get him. They've had a hard time, really hard time, getting like superstar talent over there. You know, they're able to get guys like Matt Chapman and Willy Adames, but they also kind of overpay for those guys. Like, that's how the Giants have to do it. They have to overpay to get people to go there. And especially offensive players, it's not a good hitter's park. It's actually a really bad hitter's park. So I think they got desperate and they said, you know what, fine, we'll do the entire contract. And I think at that point, Breslow was ready to just be like, okay, I'm done. Like, I think it got that bad between him and Devers. And, you know, Cora, they said today that Cora backs her decision. I'm sure at the time he was losing his mind, but I think ultimately they just decided, we need to completely shift the culture here. And you look at, you know, cases like him not running out the ground ball in New York, right? And then, oh, you know, he has a groin thing. Oh, no, he doesn't have a groin thing. He's fine now. Like, that whole thing, and that combined with your big three are up here now. Anthony, Meyer, and Campbell are all up in the majors. And I think they just looked at the culture in the clubhouse and went, this guy's not a good influence. And we got to move on. And yeah, it's a lot of people are going to hate us for it, but these guys are actually the future. Yes, you can build around Rafael Devers. You know, he's still 28 years old, like, still has a lot of baseball left in him. But if he's going to be dogging it on ground balls and he's not going to play the field when we ask him to, then that's just going to set up a whole real bad example for all these young talent, all these young talented kids that we want to bring through. So it was a shock. I was really angry at the time. I think now seeing some more of the fallout and seeing, you know, some other reactions from around the league, I think ultimately it's going to be the right move. It sucks right now. Hopefully they keep playing good baseball and they don't, you know, suddenly tank here, because that's really the best Band-Aid you can put on this right now is just to keep winning. And so far they have. So I think it sucked at first, but ultimately in the long run, I do think it'll be beneficial.
Yeah, I'm still a skeptic. I mean, I just don't know how you replace him. I mean, I was watching MLB Network earlier and they were showing the Giants clubhouse because their game started later. And, you know, they were reacting to the Devers news, and Willy Adames, Matt Chapman, they were all beaming like, oh my God, we're getting Raffy Devers. And their ace, Logan Webb, like, just everybody's just so excited to have Raffy Devers. And they're already saying he's the biggest bona fide power hitter they have had since Barry Bonds. And, you know, we had that guy all those years. And the one thing nobody's talking about is you know, it was, I don't want to say a daily controversy, but it was an elephant in the room. And after every game, he was fielding questions. Are you going to finally play first base, Devers? Where are we on that? Are you going to take grounders there? And despite all that, he's having probably the best year of his career, despite the controversy. And you look at his October numbers, I mean, he's hitting well over 300 with an on base of around 400. I went through Aaron Judge's numbers. This was the show I did with Charlie, the normal Sunday show, and everything was normal for another hour or two. And what do you think Judge is hitting in the postseason?
Probably under 250, if I had to guess.
He's hitting 205.
Oof.
So Rafi Devers is the anti-Aaron Judge in the postseason. He gets it done. And I don't know how you replace that. And, you know, maybe Roman Anthony becomes that guy. But you had him. He was cost controlled. He was just entering his prime. It was a perfect contract. And, you know, and it's over. So it's harder for me to really digest that. And I think it was all avoidable. And I think we're going to fall out of this unless another move happens. I don't see this offense holding up. I think, you know, Myers, you know, about to slip below 200. Anthony is almost finally over 100. He's got a .095 batting average or something like that. Christian Campbell, I don't know what's going on with him. He did have a hit tonight, but it's never really hard contact. He's not hitting the ball in the air a ton. So I don't, you know, they should figure it out. And, you know, there has to be a move. And Breslow said during the Zoom call today that he and Kennedy did with the media, and there was a lot of people on there. Jeff Passan was in that Zoom call asking questions, and all the local guys, and Matt McCarthy was in there from the Sports Hub, and just a wide range of people. And, you know, Breslow said, you know, as we get to the deadline here, you know, we have the resources to get better, but you can't wait till the deadline. That's just not gonna, I don't think this lineup isn't built to put up runs, and this pitching is nice, but it's not going to last forever. I mean, they're going to be giving up at least four and five spots. So I don't know. And then the June Lee article came out. So, and before I get to that, just to reinforce what I said last night, I don't think they have any plans to fire Breslow today on June 17th. I don't think that's a plan, but I think it's going to get to a place where they have to, you know, if we do start to go on a skid and then Jordan Hicks comes in and gets lit up, I mean, everyone's going to destroy the trade. You know, everything's fine because we've won six in a row right now. But eventually real life is going to rear its ugly head. And it's at best, it's going to be a grind. So so you have all that. And then the June Lee article came out. Some people are calling it a bombshell article. Apparently, Breslow has alienated himself from the long tenured people, O'Halloran, Romero, Ferreira. And so they've kind of been shut down. And in a perfect world, I think that's a good thing. You know, if it was an experienced executive pushing them away, I would love that. But with Breslow being extremely inexperienced, I don't know if that's a good thing. And then they're having a lot of philosophical issues behind the scenes, and I think that has a lot to do with Driveline and the pitching labs and all of this. That he fired a scout earlier because the scout, apparently they were all on a Zoom call, the call ended, well, it didn't end, the scout thought it ended, and then he started talking shit to Breslow, gets fired I think immediately. So Breslow doesn't have a ton of friends in that front office right now, and things at least temporarily are going well, but without an immediate pivot to some help for this lineup, I'm an extreme skeptic.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And look, at the end of the day, trading Rafael Devers is a career defining move for good, for, you know, better or worse for Breslow, because if he now pivots and makes a couple more moves, maybe, you know, rips up the original deal for Bregman and extends him and gives him a true long-term deal, so you don't have to worry about him opting out, maybe adds a few more bats as well, then it could end up being a good thing. Or if he doesn't, if he's not aggressive at the deadline, and, you know, Jordan Hicks, they can't fix him, Kyle Harrison doesn't pan out, and nothing, you get nothing from that trade, and the Red Sox fall out of it, then he's going to look really bad. And then, absolutely, Henry has every right to go ahead and fire him, because, look, I gave the best hitter in our lineup the contract. I did what you all asked me to do, and then you turn around and trade him, because I think, as we saw from the June Lee articles, Greg Breslow has a fragile ego. And if you disagree with him or you get on the wrong side of him, he can be a little vicious. I mean, that story about that scout, like, that was a guy who was with the Red Sox since 2017. I mean, he's been with the team for a long time, and literally just, you know, called Breslow one word. It's not even that bad of a word, and Breslow fires him. Like, that's kind of crazy. Like, really, you have that thin of skin that you can't handle a little bit of that? And then I think the same thing happened with Devers. I think Breslow thought he could get through to Devers to have him play first base after Costas got hurt, and Devers sold him the pound sand because, like, well, you're the one who told me to put my glove away in the offseason, so I'm not going to do it. I'm not playing first. I'm not playing third. And I think Breslow got pissed and said, okay, well, now I'm going to start making phone calls because I think you're a problem in the clubhouse now. So, look, it might work out, but I'm a little worried about that sort of glimpse into Breslow's ego. Like, as soon as a player gets on your nerves or doesn't do exactly what you ask, you're going to turn around and trade him. Or, you know, someone that you work with disagrees with you or, you know, whatever, and you're going to fire people. That's a bit much for a guy who was, like, what, the 14th pick to have this job? I mean, it's not like you were the front runner, Craig, okay? You were, like, the 14th guy. So let's calm down a little bit over there. Like, there are people in that building that are way more experienced than you. And, you know, now he's kind of coming in. Like, I don't want to say the word power trip. It's not quite there yet. But trading Rafael Devers in the middle of the season just because you didn't like his attitude is a bold move one way or the other. So I hope there's more on the horizon. I was a little bit encouraged when on the Zoom call he said, look, we don't consider this us waving the white flag. If anything, we have a lot more money freed up now. We can be a lot more aggressive at the deadline because now we can take on money if we have to. If, you know, if there's a player that we really like and he's got a contract, it won't be as big of a deal. But that's easier said than done now. It's very easy to sit there on Zoom and tell people, yeah, no, we'll be aggressive at the deadline. Don't worry. Like, we're not giving up. But, you know, like you said, if they go on a skid, if they lose 10 of their next 15, is he really going to be sitting there going, yeah, we're going to be aggressive at the deadline and I'm going to be willing to trade more prospects to bring in veteran players to bolster the lineup? I'm not so sure about that. I think that's where it goes back to the retreating into, oh, no, it was a development year. It was always a development year. That's why we traded Devers, because it's all about developing the kids, Anthony, Meyer, and Campbell. Like, it was about getting them more opportunities. So that's the part where it's like, how much do you trust him? Because I want to believe what Craig Breslow said tonight before the game, where he said, we're not waving the white flag. You know, we're going to be aggressive. We still want to win. But I'm also, I wouldn't be surprised if after a losing streak, he goes, well, it's really more about developmental year. You know, we're looking forward to 2026, 2027. Because they've pulled that crap in the past. So he's put himself in quite a position here where he has to deliver one way or the other. And if they do nothing at this deadline, they fall out of it. Yeah, his job's absolutely on the line. I don't care that he's only been here a year. It's, you know, you make a move like that and it backfires, that's fireable offense. No doubt about it.
Yeah, it would be the end of his second year. And I mean, Haim was not on speaking terms with most of that front office his final year. And you're kind of in that territory right now with Breslow. And I don't think he's going to have the luxury of being unlikable in the front office and then unsuccessful with his results. I don't think that's going to happen. And an interesting thing I kind of thought of when you brought up Bregman, I feel like two things. Number one, they almost have to extend him. They almost have to make sure that he stays. But number two, I think he's got all the leverage in that. But going back to number one, and I'll credit Nick the Voice this for talking about it last night and then tweeting it. Breslow, with his unlikable personality, his condescending, alienating personality, might have cost the Red Sox 8.5 years of Rafi Devers for only 1 year of Bregman. So to just get him for 1 year, you just messed up everything. And so I kind of feel like, you know, you need to avoid that narrative. You need to avoid Bregman walking and then that scenario coming to fruition. I mean, what is a roster next year without Bregman and Devers? I know $70 million is off the books for the year, but Craig Breslow causes far more problems than he solves.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Alex Bregman has a ton of leverage right now. The injury took some of that leverage away because he did miss a good chunk of games, but if he comes back and hits like gangbusters like he was before the injury, then yeah, even if the Red Sox did go to him wanting to make, you know, sign to an extension, he's not going to do it because he's going to sit there and go, I can opt out and make twice what you're offering me on the open market. And, you know, I don't have to play here. I can go somewhere else. So he does hold a lot of the cards. And to your point, if they let Bregman walk, your third base depth, I mean, right now, the next guy up in the system is Blaze Jordan, who just got to AAA like a week ago. And nobody knows if he's even, you know, going to pan out as a big leaguer. Probably not at this rate, because it feels like he was in AA forever. So, you know, and this kid you got from the Giants, I mean, you know, he was a top pick last year. The Giants actually took him after the Red Sox took Braden Montgomery, who they traded in the Crochet package. But this kid, Tibbs, has not panned out. I mean, he's still in high A and he's not hitting. So it's, you know, they took a big risk, you know, going out to get a guy like that. He is a corner infielder, but if he doesn't pan out, then, you know, you lose Devers for 8.5 more years, you know, who's on a Hall of Fame kind of track for his career. You lose Bregman because you signed him to, frankly, a bad contract that allowed him to have all the leverage and walk whenever he wanted to. And then you just have an empty hole at third base. That's going to be a huge problem. So, yeah, Breslow has put himself in the firing line for sure just because of that.
The return on this trade, I mean, we're still bashing the Mookie trade to this day, and that trade might look amazing compared to this one because Verdugo was serviceable. And I know the last half of 2023, there was a lot of controversy. Apparently, he was showing up late and there was a rift between him and Cora, but he had some epic walk-offs in the first half of that year. And, you know, so he was very serviceable. Wong was very serviceable until this year. We never got an all-star caliber guy, a perennial all-star caliber guy out of the Mookie deal. But you look at, we don't know what Jordan Hicks is. We don't know what Kyle Harrison is. We don't know if Tibbs is ever going to see the light of day. And that Jose Bayo kid, they can't even find a picture of him to put it on the screen to, you know, when they're showing the trade package. So I don't know. I just, things aren't trending well for Breslow right now. And like I said, I don't I don't think, I just think he's going to be too toxic and radioactive a month from now. And if I'm wrong and we're in it, then so be it. I mean, winning, you know, winning cures all. But yeah, and I don't endorse this behavior, but, you know, he got doxxed earlier and they posted his address and a picture of his house. And I don't think he's unsafe in Boston, but I don't think he's going to be able to go out to dinner with his family and not be accosted, you know, verbally. You look at all the executives before him, Epstein, Dombrowski, even Sherrington won a ring. So you got to give him credit for that. And I can't remember if I said this on the air or privately, but we all know I hated Chaim Bloom more than anyone on this podcast. If I had to have a beer with Chaim or Breslow, I'd rather have a beer with Chaim. Chaim at least has a good vibe, and I'd have to not talk about Corey Kluber, obviously. But I don't, there's nothing likable about Craig Breslow. They got a guy that is just extremely unlikable. He's unproven. He doesn't even have the clout, the record to have the audacity. He can't walk around that front office like he's Dave Dombrowski and think he commands all this respect.
Yeah, I mean, it's he does give off, like, I'm the smartest guy in the room energy. And look, if you're proven to be right about that, you can do that. You know, if you've been an executive in the league for 10 years and you've won a ring or you've at least had successful teams, like, you can walk around like that. When it's your first year on the job and you were, like, one of the last picks to get the job and now you've traded away the best player, like, it just... That I think you're right. Like, the volatility of Craig Breslow could be a problem. Like, if he's just not going to get along with anybody, if, like, him and Cora start falling out now, which maybe they already have, who knows? But if he starts to have a fallout with the manager and then that leaks down to the clubhouse, it can get really messy. So, look, he took a big risk with this, and, you know, we'll see if it pays off. You know, time will tell. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. We'll see how those players in that trade package, you know, how they pan out. But if none of them do, then yeah, this will be worse than the Mookie trade. And we never thought we'd see something worse than the Mookie trade.
Right. And in terms of replacing him, I mean, you can't go the route you went last time to try to cast a wide net. You just got to hope a phone call happens, you know, and some respected executive says, hey, I can help you out, you know. But, you know, whoever that is would obviously want a lot of leeway. And, yeah, I was really, I knew there was less than a 10% chance it would happen, but I was kind of hoping Alex Cora would resign or just ask to get out of his contract. And, you know, people will say, well, he's got, you know, $12 million on the books. He'll get that from the next team. There's just someone's going to pay him. So I don't think he cares. And it's just got to be exhausting to have a constant circus. How do you go from Dave Dombrowski in the first 2 years you're a manager to the circus that followed all those years? It's beyond me.
Yeah.
But what do we have tomorrow? So definitely Bueller.
Yeah, got Walker Bueller against Brian Wu tomorrow night at 9:40. So Wu's kind of been up and down this year. He's also been had a little bit of an injury bug too. So, but he is tough, and I kind of agree with what you said earlier. Like, I don't think Bueller's just going to be able to cruise through this lineup the way that Giolito did. Even if he does pitch the way he did the last time, where he's, you know, aggressive, you know, going after it with the fastball, like. Bueller just kind of, he's one of those that, you know, he has a good start and then follows it up with a kind of a bad start. So I think it might be a little bit more of a struggle tomorrow.
Yeah. And this Red Sox lineup isn't really putting up a ton of runs. Let me see. real quick. Usually just pull up the schedule and you can kind of see what the scores were. But I mean, yeah, so just go back to you, tonight you put up two runs. On Sunday you put up two. One was a solo home run from Devers. You put up four against the Yankees on Saturday, two the night before that. In fact, you haven't scored more than four runs in just about a week. So, and then you just removed your best hitter. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see how things end up trending, but we're at least pitching well, and we're catching the Mariners at a bad time. And the Giants are going to have all that Devers energy, and we'll see how that series goes. I think we have Crochet in this one, so we're setting up again. We'll have Giolito and Buehler in that Giants series, and I'm not sure who else, whoever pitched Sunday, I guess. No, was that Crochet? I don't know. It's late. So 1:14, it'll be a late night tomorrow night. But again, we're committed to this. You know, we started a new format. We basically do a show every day, plus emergency podcasts. Usually mid-July is emergency podcast season, but it happened last night. Maybe it'll happen again. Maybe there'll be a firing or a resignation or a trade. Who knows? This has been the craziest season we've ever podcasted. Let's put it that way. So
definitely. Yep.
We'll see everyone tomorrow night.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see you guys tomorrow night. Hopefully you can stay up late with us again, but enjoy the game and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.